Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. It's estimated that 14% of Bexar County's population lives with type 2 diabetes. This disease typically presents later in life, but increasingly is being contracted by young people who can experience it earlier and also advance complications such as blindness, amputations, and even death earlier in life due to the complications caused by type 2 diabetes. We're learning more and more about the heavy toll that childhood diabetes demands, and we're also looking for new ways to combat this. You're invited into our conversation as we talk about type 2 diabetes. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org, and you can also tweet at us at Twitter. And our guest this afternoon, we're joined by Dr. Carolina Solis Herrera. She's the Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Diabetes Division at UT Health San Antonio and Medical Director of the Diabetes Clinic at UT Health Physicians. Welcome to The Source, Doctor.
Thank you very much for having me, David.
Also with us, Dr. Jane Lynch, Professor of Pediatrics and Division Chief of Pediatric Endocrinology at UT Health San Antonio. Dr. Jane Lynch, great to have you.
Great to be here.
And also with us, Roberta Washburn, a registered dietitian and registered diabetes educator with the University Health System and nutrition and food safety instructor at the Culinary Institute of America in San Antonio. And Roberta, great to have you.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, Dr. Jane Lynch, can you tell me about how different is it that we're seeing diabetes showing up in children much earlier?
So very different. We've seen a rise in type 1 diabetes over the years, with a dramatic rise in our overall diabetes about 20 years ago that was first reported from Arkansas and Texas as type 2 appearing for the first time in children. And now by 2017, after there have been several studies initiated over the last 10 to 15 years to look at incidence and prevalence rates, we had reached in 2017, half of our new onset kids over age 10 had type 2. And as of this past year, half of all of our referrals for children with diabetes new onset have type 2, meaning we saw over 150 kids last year and half of them had type 2 at onset.
And Dr. Carolina Solis Herrera, we're talking about full-blown diabetes, not pre-diabetes. And tell me, what's the difference?
Yes. So diabetes is extremely prevalent in the United States. And in our adults 18 years and older, approximately 30 million of Americans have diabetes, and another 7 million have it but don't know it. Just here in South Texas, one out of seven people have diabetes. And diabetes is a disease that starts a lot earlier than when we diagnose it. So approximately 10 years before you get a diagnosis of diabetes, you have this entity called prediabetes. And what that means is your body is already struggling metabolizing the sugar that you eat. So your levels of sugar are a little bit slightly higher than the normal levels. And that is a condition that perpetuates and slowly starts damaging your eyes, your nerves, your kidneys. And then eventually you go to the doctor when your sugar is really high, and then they diagnose you with diabetes. But yes, they're very different. I mean, they're part of the same disease, but very early in diabetes.
So by the time many people show up to the doctor, they say, I've got this buzzing in my foot, won't go away. And then the doctor says, well, you've got diabetes and you've had it for a while. And the person says, I didn't know. I mean, but should they have known?
Well, what you need to try to do is, of course, have a healthy lifestyle, but then go to your doctor regularly, at least once a year, so they can check your sugar, your blood pressure, your lipids, see if you have any risk factors. If you're obese, just being here in South Texas a risk factor, as most of us are Hispanic, and that is a risk factor to develop diabetes. So if they do your average sugar in the last 3 months, that is called A1C, it's a very easy test. You get the results right away. And if the numbers are already abnormal, if it's 5.8 to 6.4, you already potentially have pre-diabetes, and that is the time to be more aggressive and intervene.
All right, Roberta Washburn, a registered dietitian. A person gets told you have pre-diabetes. People, you know, if they really embrace that and they take their agency and say, I'm going to do something about this, what should they do?
Well, absolutely, David. They need to address it with healthy lifestyle behaviors. Some people feel they need to go on a diet right away. A diet is something we often get on and get off.
We're all on a diet.
We're all on a diet.
I mean, we have eating habits. Some are good diets, and some are not so good.
Exactly. So what we really recommend is that people look towards balance, variety, and moderation. Make half your plate vegetables or non-starchy vegetables. Put a lot of color on your plate, some protein every meal and snack for that satiety value, and just moderation. I think here in America, we've just gotten out of hand with our portion control, and we just think we need a lot to fill our tanks, and then we get overstuffed. So just moderation in what we eat. A lot of people could just start very simply with the healthy plate method, which shows a quarter of the plate being protein, a quarter carbohydrate, starchy vegetables, bread, that sort of thing, and then half the plate being non-starchy vegetables. If somebody needs help with that, choosemyplate.gov is put out by the USDA, and that would be a great resource. The other thing we need to do is get off the sugary beverages, the soda and the sweet tea, so popular here in South Texas. Drink more water, and we need to move more.
So I seem to be living in an era of so many fad diets right now. Like you're going to be able to fix whatever's wrong with you and even reverse your aging and all sorts of kind of crazy stuff by having a very highly focused diet type of a thing. No carbs or, you know, fasting and all this. What does that have to do with this?
There are so many catches out there. People want a quick, easy answer, of course. But healthy lifestyle just is over time. It takes a lot of time. And so that is such a big industry, those fad diets. I don't believe they work in the long run. It may help somebody jumpstart. But then what we need to do over time is just day-to-day healthy lifestyle behaviors. Yes, if we get off it, if we splurge a little, then that's fine. But if we can just every day just eat moderately, drink more water, and move our bodies. That's it. I don't believe in the fad diets at all. They don't work, and they just spend our money.
So, Dr. Jane Lynch, all we got to do is just eat smart and no more problems, right?
It is not so easy. We have kids who are fed from preschool to school years on with diets that have school breakfast that have more salt than they need for the entire day. Often it's a double breakfast if the class qualifies for a meal. And lunches that, again, often are bought at the dollar store. And we have working parents with two jobs, and the kids often are home after school snacking. Lots of processed food. It's difficult in some areas of San Antonio to get fresh fruit and vegetables and have the time to cook when you're stressed, especially for lower income. So we don't say it's that easy because you're changing some habits that might have been entrenched from early on, but we're saying it's critical that the kids stay in PE, they have some healthy lunches, we encourage parents to pack lunches and serve breakfast at home, and really try to get those habits in early. We're usually seeing the kids after the habits of the kids and often their parents are pretty entrenched.
Are we seeing kids, Dr. Lynch, who get diagnosed you have diabetes and we're able to where it's also medication and what's really going to turn this around for them? So they don't come up in their 20s with amputations.
No, they do, unfortunately. We have done we're at the end of a 15-year study and sponsored by the NIH called the Today Study, and it's been quite shocking. We called it our What If study when we started, where we said, what if we could have all of the resources we needed when a child presents with type 2 diabetes? We could pay their transportation, we can do an incentive for taking medicines, we could provide medication for diabetes, for lipids that are high, for blood pressure that's high. We could do all of the education they need, and in one arm of the study, even provide a lifestyle coach that would come to their house and help them with exercise. And you would think that would really turn around type 2 once it had started in a child, but type 2 in a child is probably the tip of an iceberg of a group of young adults who've inherited a higher risk for diabetes, a genetic risk for diabetes, perhaps some other obstacles in their home for their socioeconomic status and parents working. And so to our surprise, and we reported this at the ADA last year, we saw high rates of beta cell failure or requiring insulin within 1 year. 50% of our kids on the oral medications that work for adults, usually for 10 years, were ineffective by 1 year. And then that study 11 years ago has been continued till now. And at this point, our young adults are not quite 30. They're in their late 20s. And when we presented this at the ADA, and we will be publishing all of this spring, we were seeing heart attacks and strokes. We had 7 deaths of our 700 kids, of which 5 were heart attacks and strokes. We had 38 cardiovascular events. We had very high rates of retinopathy, including proliferative retinopathy, which can lead to blindness. We saw high rates, the majority of them had hypertension with 2 to 3 drugs to control it, high lipids, and then of those young women who were pregnant, we saw extremely high rates, 4-fold to 8-fold rates of outcomes in their infants that either were born stillborn or with major congenital anomalies. And none of these kids are 30 yet. So this is a disease that's different than adults and really scary.
It's very scary. What you're talking about, it is scary. And Dr. Carolina, can you tell us more about that? I mean, what are you seeing there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we were saying that approximately 30 million of Americans have diabetes, but also approximately 80 million of Americans have prediabetes. And from those, a good percentage already have some form of complication. According to the Center for Disease Control, from those 30 million of Americans and Americans, approximately 88% of them are overweight or obese. Approximately 75% of them have hypertension, have high cholesterol. 44% of them develop some form of end-stage kidney disease. And approximately 50% of them, and this is very new data, can develop heart failure. So a very, very prevalent disease that has many, many complications that need very, very aggressive treatment since childhood. So that's why we need to change the mentality and be aggressive as soon as we detect it and prevent the risk factors.
And with the work that the adult research group's doing at TDI, they are noticing younger ages for kidney transplant lists, younger ages for cardiac complications. So we are, actually many of our parents are young parents who have diabetes themselves, and we're encouraging them to be aware of some of this data that's coming out and some of the interventions that are becoming available.
Yeah, absolutely. And at UT Health San Antonio, partnering with the Texas Diabetes Institute, we have a large, one of the biggest in the United States centers of research in type 2 diabetes. And we are trying to understand better the mechanisms by which this important disease develops its complications. And also, we are ahead trying many of the medications that are just coming out of the market or medications that are in the pipeline to treat diabetes, and hopefully we'll find better ways to treat this devastating disease.
And Roberta Washburn, I mean, a lot of people have almost kind of normalized the fact that there's diabetes in our family, you're going to have diabetes, I'm going to have diabetes, and they don't see this, I mean, the terrible consequences.
That's correct. People just assume that it's going to be them too. When I worked in dialysis, people like, oh, mom and dad were here, grandma was here, I'm going to end up here. But we need to break that cycle. And we understand that it's not easy. It's not easy just to turn your whole diet and lifestyle topsy-turvy. So we just suggest small, simple changes. One simple thing people could do is eliminate some of those sugary beverages. Find out from the doctor if they could begin a simple exercise program, add more vegetables. So not just assuming that, oh, I'm doomed with diabetes. We don't have to be, but we do have to educate from early on that we can make some lifestyle behavior changes.
All right, we're going to take a break here. Our phone lines are open. The number is 210-614-8980. If you're listening to this, you should be scared. This is really a big problem, a big deal. It's costing lives. It's very expensive to our society. This is something that we've got to deal with as a community. Do you have questions for our experts about the signs, the symptoms, the options for treatment for type 2 diabetes? What do you want to know about how to keep this from happening to you and your children. Call in. The number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes? How has this affected your life? What have you experienced? Does type 2 diabetes run in your family? Have you changed your lifestyle to manage it? How has that worked out for you? What's been the biggest challenge? The number to call in is 210-614-8980. And we have a caller with us now, and Teresa. Teresa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for allowing me to speak. I was diagnosed diabetic 5 years ago, and it is a family tradition. All five siblings have diabetes, but I've been able to control it by changing my lifestyle. And yes, eating healthier, moving, taking the stairs when you don't want to, but taking the stairs instead of the elevator. Taking care of your skin every day because your skin suffers also. Mentally, not allowing it to get to you because you feel left out, and then you feel like you have a death over you, and it doesn't have to be that. And I have three daughters, and it's probably in their genes, so I taught them early. You know, you can eat anything you want, but within moderation, and you have to move. You have to move. And try to stay healthy. That's all I've got to say.
Teresa, thank you so much for the call. So Dr. Jane Lynch, Teresa brought up, she says it's in their genes. What is the genetic part of this thing?
Well, we've done a lot of research here in South Texas, and we know that diabetes runs in families, and it's a multitude of genes that create the perfect storm. We also know the more scary data is a study that complements a lot of research going on nationally with Dr. Scaname in our group and a grant from the San Antonio Foundation working with Trinity and SAMC and UT Health, that infants born to mothers who have diabetes during pregnancy actually have DNA genetics, genes, methylation, changes to the DNA. It's actually physically altered during the pregnancy, and you can measure it in the cord blood. And those changes in the way their genes that they have are expressed are enhanced for a higher risk for diabetes and heart disease in the next generation. So each three of her daughters not only inherited the genes, but they inherited the genes that were, if there was diabetes during pregnancy, methylated and altered due to the high exposure to blood sugar in the uterus and in utero. And then now have a risk for earlier onset of diabetes in their lifetime.
So that sounds like we're set up for a very terrible trend.
We think that's why the rate's risen so quickly in the last 20 years. I love it that this mom is very in tune to that and making changes early, because I would argue many of the parents that we see who are diagnosed in their early 30s, which in and of itself was young, and now have children who've been diagnosed in their late teens, weren't aware of this and didn't make those changes. And it's really hard to change two generations of habits.
Roberta Washburn, you're a registered dietitian, and you work at the University Health System in this area looking at, and with the Culinary Institute of America here in San Antonio, trying to get people to develop healthier eating habits and lifestyle changes, as our caller did. So how successful can you do? What can you reverse diabetes through these changes?
No, you can't actually reverse it. Once we're diagnosed with diabetes, that diagnosis is with us. But you can certainly slow down the progression of the issues that come up, and you can help monitor your weight status that way. I just really appreciate what our caller said, that she did try to make some changes with her children, and just slow, steady changes, moving more, walking or exercise for dessert as opposed to a sweet. Fruit helps us satisfy that sweet craving. And I find that if people just don't have so much tempting food around the house, they won't eat it. Bring in more healthy things. It is affordable to eat healthy. A lot of people would dispute that. But if we shop in season, buy our produce that's in season, buy foods that we can stretch with the whole family, and prepare foods at home. A lot of people are eating out so much. It's so easy and convenient with our busy lifestyles, all of us working parents. Just, it's so easy for people to drive by and pick up fast food almost every evening. I hear that daily in our practice. I am a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes educator, and I hear it from all walks of life. But just making a practice to cook at home more, even if it's a simple meal.
So is it the fast food or is it the drinks that come with it?
I'd say it's a combination. We really believe if people could eliminate sugary beverages, that would help them immensely. But it's not that fast food is terrible. We all enjoy it once in a while. I think it's that people do it as a constant habit. So once in a while, certainly. But it's moderation, definitely.
Dr. Carolina Solis Herrera, mm-hmm. Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Diabetes Division at UT Health San Antonio. If you can tell me about studies that are being done here. I know you're taking part in studies.
Absolutely. I'm just going to echo real quick what Roberta and Jane were saying about our caller, because the most important thing to control your diabetes is to establish the lifestyle. So I applaud her that she already put all those things in place. But it is also true that you cannot just control your diabetes with diet, unfortunately, because there are a lot of processes that are going on in your body that you cannot control with just your diet, because diabetes is the inability to manage your sugar inside your body. So you do need medication. And right now, there are several medications that have shown to decrease your risk of heart attacks, your risk of strokes, your risk of overall death, your risk of hospitalization for heart failure, and to decrease the progression of diabetic kidney disease, which is a disease that is very prevalent in diabetes. So at the Texas Diabetes Institute, and currently in collaboration with the University Health System and UT Health San Antonio, what we're doing is that we're doing free screenings. If you think that you have risk factors that you could be having pre-diabetes or diabetes, we have multiple clinical trials going on where you can, if you qualify, you can join to a study with pre-diabetes. You can join with a study of type 2 diabetes. And from those studies, we also know that for patients, for example, if you have heart disease, if you have heart failure, we have some studies that are actually looking into potential new drugs and potential new interventions to treat these complications of diabetes that have a very, very high mortality. We have a study also for fatty liver, and we are giving free screenings with very new technology called FibroScan. So 70% of patients with diabetes can develop fatty liver. And the problem with that is that fatty liver can actually make your liver fibrotic and develop something called liver cirrhosis, which could take you to end-stage liver disease. So we are screening for fatty liver. We are screening for diabetes. And if you're interested in joining any of those clinical trials or just getting screened to see if you have prediabetes or diabetes, you can give us a call. The phone number is 210-358-7200. Again, 210-358-7200. And you can just come in, walk in. You don't need to make an appointment, and we'll be happy to screen you.
We got a tweet from Salud America, a Latino-focused health organization based here in San Antonio. And the tweet is, the cause of diabetes stems from much more than individual behavior. It's also unhealthy environments that create unhealthy lives. So, Dr. Jane Lynch, is that part of the solution? Is that part of the prescription, being able to create safe environments where people can walk at night, being able to take on this sort of fatalistic attitude that some people have about this?
It is. It is. There's whole areas of our city that are not safe for kids to go outside and play, or not safe to go outside and walk. We have to be very careful in what we recommend for the safety of adults and children. And there are a number of aspects of our built environment, is the word for that, where beyond sidewalks, perhaps there's after-school programs which don't allow the kids to be outside, or being in the home where the parents are working, where you really can't go exercise. So we try to be creative in terms of lifestyle. We also know there's probably a contribution of plastics and some of the environmental agents that impact in a similar way to the pregnancy, how our genes react. We know it's crazy, but the microbiome, the way our bacteria in our gut are altered by diet, can occur even at the time of birth and is difficult to turn around. So we're learning a lot about ways that we can alter risks for diabetes. And we're also seeing some huge breakthroughs in medications that weren't available in the past that we're working to a lesser extent with for the children. But medications that really go to aspects of disease prevention and looking for ways that we can predict who is at highest risk to have the disease progress.
We see a metformin frequently prescribed. Is that something that children can?
We use metformin quite a bit. There's apparently a media scare right now about some contaminated metformin used overseas. We've had to calm a lot of fears for families because we use quite a bit of metformin. It's extremely helpful for kids as a first medication. However, unlike in adults where it might be effective for 8 to 10 years, for us, half the kids at 1 year are needing a second medication. And we were a site of a study that used a newer medication that we did get approved for kids from the FDA last year that we are just now starting to use, which helps lower appetite, help with weight loss, and improve insulin sensitivity as an alternative to insulin as a second drug. So we're really looking to come up with new ways to algorithm approach.
All right, we're taking another break. If you've got a question or comment, an observation, you want to tell us what's happening in your family, we'd love to hear it. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Type 2 diabetes. We should be doing a show on this every day because this is so important. It's impacting so many lives. It's shortening lives. It's creating so much suffering. We've got to make this a number one priority here in San Antonio. 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about type 2 diabetes. The big takeaways are that there are so many people here in San Antonio who are undiagnosed as having diabetes or who have pre-diabetes. And if you have pre-diabetes, there are a lot of options who can try to keep you from getting full-blown diabetes. Also, it's hitting children much more frequently, and it hits them a lot harder. They're not just getting regular type 2 diabetes. This takes a huge toll on their lives. It's going to shorten their lives, and we need to figure this out, and we need to make adjustments in our community so that we can provide the health and support that these people need, that you need, because it's happening to all of us. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Let's get Stephen on the air. He's called in. And Stephen, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Stephen. I'm a master's student in nutrition, and I have a nonprofit called Guardopia. Due to the research that I'm doing, I've seen that Tulane University coined the term called food swamps, which actually may be more related to obesity and its related diseases. Some of the suggestions they made is policy changes, such as zoning to create less unhealthy food opportunities, as well as sugary beverage taxes. So I'm wondering, could we do something like that in San Antonio around public policy?
All right. So we've heard about food deserts, and now that's where you can really can't find food in certain neighborhoods or whatever, fresh food. And food swamps is where your only options are really unhealthy food. So if you have a dollar store in a community, but you don't have a grocery store, then you can't get fresh fruits and vegetables. All you can get are hot Cheetos, and that's not good. And so Steve's point is, well, some communities are adopting zoning regulations and public policy to make sure that there are healthy food vendors around. Roberta Washburn, a registered dietitian, your reaction to that?
Well, I would agree with our caller, yes. I think people just do need to speak up and work through our elected officials. To begin with, I think people need to get out and vote and use their power that way, and then work and speak with our elected officials, our council members, city council members, and let them know what we need here as a city.
Right, and that brings up the issue of insurance. If you have a whole community, Texas is last for insurance. Let's go to a caller, Damien, and he wants to talk, I think, about something similar to this. Damien, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, thank you. I've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes for a year, and one of the things that has been prohibitive for me is I work for a good company. I get good insurance, but prescriptions still cost me in the hundreds of dollars every quarter, because they do prescriptions every 3 months, things like insulin and, stuff like metformin and stuff like that tends to be very expensive. And what about people who couldn't afford that kind of medication? I mean, it's dangerous for them to not get their insulin or to not take their medication.
All right. Thank you for that call, Damien. Dr. Carolina Solis-Herrera, are you seeing this in the community that you work with? And I hear a lot about people who have to half their insulin dose because they can't afford it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. We at the Texas Diabetes Institute, we see a lot of challenging situations. And it is true that some of these medications are very expensive. There are generic medications that can be used, and there is also even over-the-counter insulin that can be used. But yes, cost is always something challenging for some of our patients. And that's when it's really, really important that we talk to our representatives and that we go and vote and that we establish better programs. Here in Bexar County, there are programs that cover some of these medications. There's CareLink, there's MAP programs. Also, the drug companies have patient assistance programs. So I would advise our caller and the rest of the people listening to try to explore these programs, because that can help a lot with the cost of the medication.
Is diabetes a disease of poverty, Dr. Jane Lynch?
Yes, to some degree, it certainly exacerbates it creates more barriers to being able to treat it well. And with type 2 diabetes, we've found a dramatic difference in the rates among minority, racial, and ethnic groups compared to children who are non-Hispanic white. And that's seen all across the country. Probably the group hardest hit are the Native American Indian groups. And Hispanic children are incredibly at higher risk.
And you mapped it out? Where
I did. I did.
What did you
find?
This
is a new study. So I would say we should speak to our officials and express our concern, but they are wonderfully aware here in Bexar County. I think this is a unique county. We're working with the Metro Health Chief of Informatics right now at Metro Health District. And we took our past 14 months of kids and map them to the zip code they came from, because we know San Antonio is incredibly segregated. We know there's a 20-year difference in lifespan if you live in North San Antonio versus downtown South or East West Side downtown south of the middle of the city. And we know much of that has to do with education level and income and working double jobs and stressors. So access to care is influenced by all of that. So we mapped out by zip code where our type 1 and type 2 newly diagnosed patients came from the past year. And we have a highly significant difference of areas of the city that are specifically related to income by zip code that show dramatic differences for type 1 versus type 2 children, where type 1 children tend to be in higher income families and type 2 children more so in those regions that we know of San Antonio that are less able to...
Yeah, the non-affluent areas.
Right.
Let me go to a caller. This is Don. Don, thanks for hanging on. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello. I actually work with a gentleman that had a type 2 diagnosis. He was initially on insulin and metformin, and he got a diet and exercise program. He lost 120 pounds. He's no longer on insulin. He's no longer on metformin. And I think that speaks volumes to the fact that, yes, he still has a technical type 2 diagnosis, but he is no longer on any of the medicines. He's controlled with diet and exercise. And I think that all too often we're not telling patients that, okay, yes, we need to start you on this for now, but you've got to get on the diet and exercise program, and you can get your all these symptoms to go away.
Okay, Don, thank you for that. So let me give Roberta Washburn an opportunity to respond to that, registered dietitian.
I absolutely agree with what Don said. We do have to follow our doctor's recommendations and get on the medication if that's the best prudent move at first, but definitely to incorporate those healthy lifestyle, healthy eating. We don't even have to call it a diet, but we are all on a diet. So in making some small changes, no, a lot of people can't just upheaval everything and change everything at once, but making some small positive changes, picking one thing that maybe the family could change, and then building on that. Another thing that's really, really key anymore is decreasing screen time. We see so many young people and adults on their phones, on their tablets, watching TV, playing the games for hours and hours. I think we recommend that we have our young children and our teens decrease their screen time to no more than 60 minutes a day.
What about alcohol?
Alcohol in moderation, we feel it's fine. Once again, moderation, 21. I guess, is the big word. Pardon me, Dr. Lynch?
If you're 21,
yes, we right. do recommend 21. But just making some small changes and then building on that. But yes, and we have to move. There are a lot of programs in San Antonio also. The YMCA has the Y Living free family-based program. The food bank has a mobile mercado with fruits and vegetables. There's a lot of options out there.
Another caller, this is Moses. Moses, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, I want to congratulate the panel. It's excellent and very informative. I'm an adult cardiologist. I was in a conference in New York, and our emphasis is to start treating kids early with dietary habits, very focused on diabetes and other factors. But the gist of the studies are that if you start very early, between age 3 to 6, is where you impact the most. And efforts in communities, as in Harlem, where there's a very low, a very high poverty rate, have really changed things when the whole community gets involved, the school, the students, the parents, and even Sesame Street. So these efforts have to be undertaken because it's an epidemic and has to be seen as an emergency, and we should all participate in it.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Moses, with that information. Dr. Carolina Solis-Herrera, what about opportunities for self-monitoring using things like apps? There's all sorts of stuff out there telling people to find some technology that can help you.
Absolutely. I mean, we're in the era of technology, right? And there are a lot of free apps that you can download in your phone. One is called Calorie King. They recommend to everybody. And you can see the amount of calories, the amount of sugar. There's also MyFitnessPal. That's another really good one. And you can document how many minutes of exercise you're putting in a day, potentially how many calories you're burning. So there's a lot of information out there that you can download in your phone that will help you keep track of what you're doing, how many steps counter, even in your phone. If you just set it up correctly, there's like a little healthy heart that you can download, and that will count your steps. So you want to do approximately 10,000 steps at least a day, and that will help you potentially keep a good weight and keep a good sugar control.
Right. And finally, we're running out of time, but Dr. Jane Lynch, want to give you the last word here. What do you want to see happening here? I mean, how do you feel about this?
Well, I think we've really had sobering outcomes of our today study, and we've really appreciated these kids that hung in there with us for 15 years with, as I said, our what if study, that of the patients who did not qualify to be with us.
Troubling observations.
We see them in emergency rooms and visits, and the outcomes are scary. So I think with each generation, it's going to be harder, and the sooner we start, the better.
All right, Dr. Jane Lynch, she's a professor of pediatrics and division chief for pediatric endocrinology at UT Health San Antonio. Also want to thank Dr. Carolina Solis-Herrera, the assistant professor of medicine at the diabetes division at UT Health San Antonio, and also Roberta Washburn, registered dietitian, certified diabetes educator at the University Health System, and as food safety instructor at Culinary Institute of America here in San Antonio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning in.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.